Lion's Milk sur Radio Campus Paris 93.9 tous les premiers jeudis du mois de 22h30 à minuit.
Bonsoir et bienvenue sur Lion's Milk, Radio Campus Paris 93.9. Ce soir, on vous emporte avec nous dans notre poche. Ouais, on en a ras-le-bol de Paris, on a décidé de se casser. On va à Londres. Bon, pas pour de bon, hein, mais... Bon, on sait ce que vous allez nous dire, Londres, c'est pas très original, un petit coup d'Eurostar et on y est, deuxième ville française et tout le tralala, et puis en plus après Copenhague... C'est vrai que c'est pas très original, mais on vous assure une très 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 bonne soirée. Parce qu'on a rendez-vous avec le one and only Gerald. Oui, Gerald. Gerald, c'est le fondateur du label Jazzman Records, basé à Londres. Et c'est le créateur de la radio Jazzman Radio, de l'émission radio Jazzman Radio, sur la fameuse radio londonienne NTS.
Oui, bonsoir et bienvenue sur Lion's Milk, sur Radio Campus Paris. Et oui, exactement, finalement, on a Gerald Short de Jazzman Records sur Lion's Milk.
Ça fait très longtemps que Serjan essaye d'avoir un contact avec cet homme.
Exactement, et finalement, quand on a visité Londres, on lui a envoyé un petit mail. Et on a pu faire cette interview et on va vous faire écouter une grande partie de cette interview. Mais juste une petite histoire. Gerald Short a commencé de faire ce record dealing dans les années 90 avec plutôt des disques de 45 tours. Mais après, il a continué avec des longs disques, des jazz, spiritual jazz, des compilations très, très obscur, inconnu. Et il a un peu, pour moi, créé le genre spiritual jazz. Donc, on a joué beaucoup de Jeff Gilson, Lloyd Miller, et beaucoup de gens qui faisaient partie de ce label sur Lion's Milk pendant des années. Et donc, finalement, depuis la première émission, on jouait des morceaux des LP de Jazzman depuis la création de Lion's Milk. Et maintenant, on a l'homme qui a pu produire tous ces disques de Jeff Gilson et Lloyd Miller, des gens de spiritual jazz. Et on vous présente Jazzman.
Et oui, et la nuit tombe et Londres s'éveille littéralement. On se dirige vers Dalston après un bel apéro. Et on trouve le bar Alibi dans lequel Gerald Short, alias Jazzman, joue avec sa collègue Orsi. Donc le bar Alibi dans lequel Gerald et Orsi jouent, c'est au sous-sol. Et vu qu'il est 21h, il n'y a personne encore. Donc c'est encore mieux pour nous, puisque du coup, Gerald est libre pour une longue, très longue interview.
I was going to say, because you asked me to do a mix ages ago, didn't you?
Yeah.
And I do get asked to do mixes. The thing is, you see, I'm a bit of a, I don't know, what do you call it? Perfectionist,
I was going to say.
And to do a mix, I used to do them for the website, for the blog, but it takes me ages.
Like that one, you, I think, the first spiritual jazz one you did.
Well, yeah, well, there, exactly. Right? I've got to, you know, choosing the tracks, I find that I have to get, you know, the some very special tunes to put on there, because no one wants to hear the same stuff that everyone has got.
Of course. Yeah.
So it takes me ages to find, to go through. I shall choose this, shall I choose that, and I choosing them and recording everything, it all just takes a long, long time.
Well, from my experience, the way I got to know Jazzman Records was from the first time, the spiritual jazz compilation. I think it was when I was starting out to do radio in college in New York.
Uh-huh.
And it was the second issue, your second release of the spiritual jazz.
Europe one.
Exactly, yeah. The Europe one. We'll talk about things unchronologically. We'll go back and forth. But like, can you talk to me just in first how the spiritual jazz idea came about?
Yeah. Well, what was happening? Sorry, is that my drink?
Isn't it?
I'm really harsh. But anyway,
we can wait. Don't
no, no, it's okay. Because I can't drink. I'm just thinking shandy. So I because I'm driving. But anyway, well, the answer to your question. Let's think.
Okay.
Edit all that shit out. Well, what we were doing, me and Malcolm Cassidatis, who was working as a researcher for me, what we were doing at that time in the early 2000s was mostly funk stuff, because the Dink Funk thing was big, and we wanted to chronicle that type of music because no one had really been doing it properly. There was a lot of bootlegs around, and we wanted to meet the artists, do it all properly and legit, and find the stories, etc., etc. And we'd done quite a lot of that. You know, we'd done several albums. And despite that, the name Jazzman Records, it's not Funkman Records. You know, we've always had a background of jazz for the type of music that we were interested in. So it was always something in the back of mind that I wanted to do, and I didn't want to be pigeonholed as just doing funk stuff, which is all very well, but, you know, like I say, jazz is my, first love, if you like. And so I've always had it in the back of my mind to do something with that. But the thing is, to see, just doing a straight-ahead jazz album wouldn't really work. A jazz dance album, they've been done, but the area of spiritual jazz hadn't been done, and it was one of those styles of music that we were both interested in.
Maybe you even coined the term, in a way.
I don't think I coined the term. I can't take credit for that, but it was one of those words that, or phrases that is floating around somewhere that sort of strikes a chord, and that's the one that sticks. I mean, we were calling it modal jazz, really, before that. For want of a better word, but spiritual jazz seemed to be a bit more all-encompassing, and so we had access to some of these records and some of these tunes, and I sort of got the impression that people would be open to an album of that sort. Thank you. And and so we started working on it. I don't know, I can't remember which was the first track that we chose, but started working on it, and there was some out and out, what you might call spiritual jazz tracks on there. Some of them are a bit more funky, like the Leon Gardner or the Frank Derrick. But it was basically stuff that wasn't really categorizable in any genre, really. You know, it sort of crosses over from all sorts of fields.
So much that you had to write esoteric, modal, spiritual.
Exactly,
jazz
exactly.
On the cover, like, what are these terms?
Exactly. Esoteric, progressive, modal, spiritual jazz from around the world. And so you can put a bit of everything there. But there's a common denominator amongst them all, and that is that. That spacey vibe that you get that's very earthy, and it's not really danceable as such, but it's something that hints at something that is a bit more out there, rather than let's just make a jazz record, dum dum dum, or let's just do a blues. You know, it's just something a bit more intellectual, or cosmic, or cerebral, or something. I don't know, something with a bit more.
I mean, I would even say Sun Ra, Pharoah Sanders, to some degree John Coltrane and Ornette Coleman. Those are known names, but you didn't go for kind of those, that many names. It was the names we would see, especially spiritual jazz from around the world, would be names we wouldn't necessarily know at all.
Yeah, well...
Was it due to licensing issues?
No, not at all. I try and do stuff... I like to do my own thing. I mean, John Coltrane's been done to death. Everyone knows who he is. I'm not going to be doing anything new if I start putting John Coltrane tracks out. And the same with various other artists. There's lots of artists that people have heard of, and they've been well recognised and annotated throughout history. You know, they're well known. But what Jazzman does is try and, I don't know, speak up for the little guy, if you like, because I like to think that there's a lot of valid music out there that is worthy and of consideration and should be listened to and enjoyed, and it's good enough to stand the test of time, but no one's ever heard of it. And they're the obscurities. And there's millions of reasons why they were obscure. Some people, cynics might say, well, it's obscure because it's rubbish and no one ever bought it in the first place. But the real reason, you know, if you actually speak to these guys, is because they were brilliant at making music, but they weren't brilliant at the business of getting their records out there.
Yeah.
And making music is one thing. Being a businessman is something else. And you could say the complete opposite is true. There's plenty of shit records out there that have been pushed by brilliant businessmen because they're good at business, but making music, they're not very good at it at all, and that's why there's loads of shit records that are getting pushed and selling. So you know, so like I was saying, I like to try and push the good stuff that is lesser known and is deserved of
it's
getting
such
known.
Such a pleasure in that.
Yeah, definitely, yes. There's you know, a lot of the guys that we have championed with these albums are delighted that someone's actually taking an interest in something that they took very seriously, you know, because a lot of the people that made these records, they did it from their own pocket.
Yeah.
They didn't have a record label to pay for it all. They did it out of their own pocket, and they did it from their own creativity, their own love of the music, and to do it because that's what they felt they were put on the planet for, if you like. And so for someone to take an interest in what they've put their heart and soul in, you know, is what they, that's why they did it in the first place, to get people to listen to it.
I would actually go back to What Is Wrong With Going, the track playing right now.
Yeah.
But anyway, my girlfriend Elsa just came in. We did the show together. So we meet at the same time. We just started conversation.
Because my main question, I was going to say, have you asked it yet? But, you know, having just arrived like this and hearing you talk about the whole principle behind Jazzman and defending the little guy and etc. My main thing is, how did you end up where you are?
How did I end up where I was? Just because I like records and music, and I like... I don't like mainstream stuff generally. I try and find something a bit more different to different.
Yeah.
Something a bit... Yeah, I'm interested in it. I'm curious.
Yeah.
I want to, you know, dig deeper, if you like. You know, I want to find out. There's got to be more than what there is out there. I remember when I was a teenager and whatnot, I used to listen to Top of the Pops like everyone else, and chart music. And occasionally, you'd hear something that wasn't that, and you'd think, oh, what is that? You know, but this is before the internet. You know, it's just on the radio, just flicking through the airwaves. And so eventually, you know, I gravitate towards John Peel, the DJ, because he was the only person out there who was playing anything that wasn't pop music. And to have your ears open towards some type of music that is the stuff that strikes you inside, compared to what is 31 a plate. You know, there's millions of other people that like other types of alternative music, but this type of alternative music that struck me was jazz, basically, in all its shapes and forms, you know, from the 20s onwards, you know, and blues as well, and Latin. That's the sort of stuff that happens to touch me inside. Whereas, you know, with other people, it might be rock or psych or whatever.
I just want to speak of this is really one of the first, you know, 45 issues. What is playing right now? What is Wrong with Brewing? If I'm not mistaken, it's from South Africa, right? Letta Mublu. So if we just go, you know, way back in the first times, you were starting out with Jazzman. And actually, as I told you, I first found out Jazzman with the Spiritual Jazz reissues in college, doing the radio show of Lion's Milk. And after, because I love the label, oh my god, I want to check out what else did they do. And I found out all your 45s and some compilations of all your 45s, including this track and so many others that you reissued. And I just find it fascinating that you started that way, digging and maybe touring US, and it's mostly US, if I'm mistaken.
Yeah.
So can you talk about that period where it was mostly 45s at the beginning and not new bands like Greg Foot Group or Heliocentrics? And, you know.
Yeah, well, what I was doing, I was in the 90s, I was more of a record dealer than having the record labels. Before I had the record label, I was buying and selling records in America, selling them, bringing them back to the UK and selling them over here and trading them around the world mail order. And I was doing that because, one, to make my living, but two, because I wanted to get the records as well, because I was a record collector and DJing as well. So one thing leads to another when you're dealing with records or when you're collecting records. Pretty much every record collector in the world, if they find a double of something at the right price, then they'll sell it to their friend or trade it with them with something else. So I was just doing this on a bigger scale. But I could see the way, because I was so heavily involved with it, doing it literally 7 days a week, all day and all night, I didn't do anything else for 10 years. It was records non-stop. I could see the pattern of the market. And the way the market was going was the super rare records and the unknown records, the prices were going really high because there was such a demand for them. And not only that, but the demand created a marketplace for bootlegs of these records, because not everyone could get them and not everyone had hundreds of pounds to buy them. So some people would just do a bootleg or a compilation. And I saw people doing this and I thought, there's got to be a way of making this business work without having to do bootlegs and without having to pay. There must be a way of getting people to listen to this music without having to pay everyone to pay hundreds and hundreds of pounds for these rare records. So, you know, it wasn't really like a massive leap of faith to realise that a reissue label was the way forward. If I could, I could get people to buy these records legitimately and have the artists compensated properly, have hundreds of people listen to this music that everyone wanted to listen to in the first place, and do it right. There's got to be a way of doing it right. There were companies like Ace Records or Love and Hate in America doing it, you know, at a certain level, and I just wanted to take it to my own level, which was doing the obscure stuff, because I knew that I got the knowledge to be able to do that, and they may not have done all. There was enough records in the market or in the world to share amongst us all to be able to do it all. So that's basically how it all came about, and that was about 1998. The reason why we did sevens, I always remember Malcolm telling me once, because I was curious, I was like, well, you know, why are you so fussed about sevens? He said, because people love sevens. And I just remember him, I don't know why, but the word, that little phrase stays in my head, people love sevens. And it's true, people love them. They love them more than LPs. I don't know why. It's crazy, because they're just one, it's just one little single, 3 minute song. And people value them and worship them a lot more than albums or CDs.
And do you?
I think I do now, yeah, I've come into it, because I understand why. It's because on a 7-inch single, you've got the embodiment of that artist concentrated down onto just 2 or 3 minutes. You've got the whole soul inherent in that guy's talent and his abilities concentrated into 3 minutes of music. It's all there. There's no, oh, there's no LP where you can stretch it out or pad it out.
Like
or,
the spiritual
exactly, exactly. Or there's no 12 inch where you can, you know, do an extended remix and just, you know, pad it out for a little while. It's concentrated music, so you get the real depth and passion, and it's all got to be. It's all got to be concentrated into like just 2 or 3 minutes, and that's why Sevens have got people like them, because they can hear that passion in those 3 minutes. It may be not the same with jazz, for instance, but it's kind of true, because you've only got say 2 or 3 minutes to do a solo. You've got to get everything you want to say into that couple of minutes solo, but everyone else has got a solo as well, so the track ends up being 5 or 6 minutes long. So it's the same kind of ethos, you know. You've got to.
It's so fascinating how the format can define so much, you know. The music,
yeah, totally,
yeah.
Absolutely, and it's not going away. You know, there's it's no surprise that there's this so-called resurgence in vinyl, because so many records in the world, there's millions of them. They're not just going to disappear, are they?
Yeah.
There's always going to be people wanting them, collecting them, and DJing them. So they're not going to disappear overnight, and so there's all so they're here to stay.
Yeah. And with those sevens or 45s. You started doing also Sun Ra, two of them were Sun Ra, and I think one of them was Salah Regev, the Egyptian drummer. So particularly Salah Regev, I think that's one of your first, we can say maybe a spiritual jazz release, you know, or jazz that's unknown from around the world. Was that sort of, you know, gave you the idea to go on with these releases afterwards? And then I wanted to talk about after Jeff Gilson, the road to that, you know.
Kind of. I mean, I did have it in mind to do his album. I was in contact with Salah when he was alive, and with another friend of mine, Peter from Art Yard Records, and he actually took it a bit more serious than me, and then ended up doing the album.
Yeah.
I was busy doing so many other things, I just never got around to it, really. And but he did a great job with that, and it transpired that there were some extra tracks. And so he gave me the opportunity of putting the tracks out, because he knew that I was a Sevens guy. He wasn't really known for Sevens, so that's how that one happened. And because it's, you know, classic esoteric music, if you like, Egyptian jazz, we had to package it slightly differently. You can't just put it out as a single, because it's not going to really make any waves in the marketplace. People aren't going to look at it any differently. But if you put it in a pyramid shape and put Egyptian and put Arabic writing on it, then people might look at it a bit differently.
So you are marketing.
Yeah, exactly. So we did this pyramid shaped album, single, which was the first of its kind, I think. And if you've got some special type of music, you do need some special kind of angle or marketing or something, just to make people realise that it's a special record, you know.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's, you know, just another single, if you like.
Yeah. And you were kind of, it's funny that it was 45s, and then it was starting, you started the EPs, mm-hmm. and then what was your first LP of jazz? What was the first LP of Jasmine Records?
Oh, the first LP, that was a long time ago. That was about, was that in about 2000 or 1999? That was Frank Motley and the Hitchhikers, Canadian funk band.
Mm.
And they'd done three albums, I think it was three albums. And there's enough good tracks across the three albums to do a best of, and that's why we did that. It's a bit, you know, I mean, at the time, you know, it was quite a big venture for us, because doing an LP is a hell of a lot more expensive than doing a single. We started off doing singles also, because it's cheap, you know, and I had no idea whether anyone was going to buy them or not, so I was quite happy to risk a few hundred pounds making a single. If no one buys it, then I haven't lost much, but the albums cost thousands. So I thought it was a bit of a risk to do it, but it paid off in the end, so that was fine.
And so now I think we can headway to one of my most favorite artists ever, is Lloyd Miller and Jeff Gilson.
Yeah.
And I know, because he posted a YouTube video of seeing the Jeff Gilson archives.
Yeah.
So can you tell me the whole story?
Gilson?
I don't know.
The whole story.
Read the liner notes, it's all there.
I know, but... Well, again,
you know, I mean...
How did it start? How did you get to know Jeff Gilson?
Well, the first album I had of his would have been, I don't know when, it would have been his album amongst many other jazz albums. It's probably a new call from France, the album he did on Saba. It's got a good modal track on it. and that would have just been in the collection with lots of other records, enjoyed just as much as anything else. I wouldn't have thought it treated it any differently. But then, as time goes on, when you collect records, you start making connections and you start realising that his name is the production credit on other albums. Or you find another album of his that's got another good track on and so on. Eventually you think, yeah, it's like Nathan Davis, you know, eventually you realise that this guy's got a whole library of work. It's worth doing a retrospective. And the same thing happened with Gilson. I looked on the internet and I saw he didn't have there's nothing about him on there.
When was this?
Oh, this would have been, I don't know, mid-2000s or something. He didn't have a Wikipedia page. He didn't have an artist page. No, he didn't. There's nothing on it. And here is this guy who'd done 10 or 15 albums on his own back and have numerous
and
production
labels.
Credits. And there's nothing on there at all. So this is crazy. This guy, you know, obviously he's got a hell of a pedigree behind him. Let's get in touch and, you know, see what he's got to say. And I asked a French friend of mine, Geraldine, and she found him by... I don't speak French, you see, so I had to ask her to help me. And she found him and put us in touch. And it turns out he was living in the Ardèche in southern France. And he wasn't, you know, he'd had a stroke, so he's half paralyzed. He was in a wheelchair and he wasn't really making music anymore. And you know, he's quite old and frail as a result. But I put it to him, I said, look, Jeff, how about if we do something here? You've got this huge library of music here. I'd like to speak to you about it, you know, maybe reissue some of it so we can do an album featuring some of your tracks. And he said, okay, why not? So Geraldine and I, we travelled down to France to see him. And he was very happy to see us. His wife took us in, made us some dinner. We had a talk about music. And he didn't speak very much English at all, so everything had to go between me and Geraldine. And I asked him if I could see, you know, his records and his music room. And he took me out the back where there's a completely separate dwelling, sort of an outhouse. And in it, he had shelves and racks full of almost his whole life history. He had the records, acetates, musical instruments that he picked up from his travels in Africa, manuscripts, photographs, books, you name it. If you can imagine your whole life history, and you never threw anything away, exactly. It was all in there. Nothing was filed. It was all there in boxes, as if he'd moved house and it was just there in boxes. So it's a huge treasure trove of a massive archive of everything you can imagine. And it's phenomenal. I mean, a lot of the time when you visit old guys, musicians, they don't even have a copy of their own records. And here was Jeff, and he had multiple copies of everything he'd ever done. So it was a huge shock, and, you know, a very pleasant shock, if you like, to come across this. And I just thought, this is just amazing, because we'll be able to do so much like this. We'll be able to get all of this into the public eye and do a really good album.
What's his reaction to your
normal. His whole life has been making music, so, and all that stuff. He doesn't really care. Like, if, for instance, you've got some old school books or something, and someone came to, you know, in 20 years' time, someone comes and looks at your essays that you wrote at school and goes, wow, look at that poem, sure, it's amazing. And you're like, yeah, so what? It's my own, you know. You don't really, care, do you?
And, yeah.
So he was quite modest. He was quite happy to show us around and let us know what was what. But he was modest at the same time. He's quite protective, of course. The fact that he kept this stuff means that he hasn't given it away. He hasn't lent it to people.
Did some
really
labels try before, or was it completely
I think Heavenly Sweetness did an album with him, but
Heavenly
they
Sweetness.
Didn't really. Yes, they did a CD called Zao with some of the Malagasy stuff, but they didn't really, I don't think they got into his archive and they didn't really take it any further than that. They only left to put it on CD, for instance, didn't do any vinyl.
Yeah.
And so it is, you know, it wasn't as thorough as the work that we did. So so we left and I realised that, you know, there's a lot more to it than what I had anticipated. I thought we'd just go there, choose some tracks, go home again. But obviously this meant there's a lot more to it. I had to do it properly, which meant that, you know, I had to go back a couple more times, had to get some...
So you went back a couple of times out.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah. And I also went back after he died, because he died about a year later, but that was after we'd made the first album.
And, the first album was the best of,
yeah.
Yeah,
okay. And I also had to have, I've got some friends in France to help, because I don't speak the language, it's very difficult. So there's a guy called Fred Martin who helped out, and Jerome as well. And without those two helping and doing a lot of the research in French, it would have been a lot more difficult. Because I wouldn't have,
you know. How ironic it is that this is going to be broadcasted on French radio.
Wait, say again?
Can I just say how ironic it is that this is going to be broadcasted on French radio?
Yeah.
Mais bon, continue, please.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Oh, okay. Is your battery down?
No, it's okay. Sorry,
I think it might be because, when I think about it now, it's a bit like why the English people are more interested in American soul music, or I'm doing American music. I think it might be because you don't fully appreciate what's on your doorstep.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Exactly.
Yeah.
You just think of it, oh, it's just, you know, local jazz guy down the road. I mean, you know,
whereas, to me,
it's incredibly exotic, amazing French jazz guy down the road.
It's exotic.
You know, exactly. So to me, it might be a bigger deal than, you know, like some foreign labels have reissued English records, for instance. You know, they see it as being a different thing. But anyway, so that's what happened with Jeff, and looking into the archive, we realised there's loads and loads of unreleased tracks, a lot of acetates that he'd done, because he had his own recording studio, so he'd be able to record as many acetates as he wanted to of his own band.
Like, I think for that single track, Chant Inca,
yeah.
He has like...
yeah, loads of different versions, exactly. Yeah, loads of different versions.
It's a great so different.
Yeah, and there's other ones that I didn't put out on the thing, so I had to choose... I think I made some from the tapes. I think we made 60 or 70 CDs from the master tapes, and that took months and months of work to do it. And from those 70 CDs, 60 minutes of CD or 80 minutes of CD, I had to narrow it all the way down to the tracks that you hear on the second album. There's still loads more, but I tried to put the best ones on, so I don't think there'll be a third one, because it'll just be a worse,
yeah,
you know, yeah, just diluting it all.
Actually, before, I want to move to Lloyd Miller, but the music is so loud. Yeah, it's much better here. Can we say test?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We want you to have a good night out. If something or someone... I'm reading.
Okay.
If something or someone makes you feel uncomfortable, no matter how minor it seems, you can report it to any member of our staff, and they will make sure that it will not ruin your night. You must have wondered what I was talking about then.
Oh, yeah, I was like, God.
All right, if we continue with Jeff Gilson, so you started with the best of and then you went back and you did the alternate takes,
yes.
Right? And that took a really, I assume it was a really tough work to do.
It was tough because there was just so much of it to do,
yeah.
Yes. Because getting through the tapes, a lot of the tapes were, I mean, you know, in theory, it's easy. You know, to the uninitiated out there, you get the master tape, you record it, you listen to it, you put it out, which is what you do. But the tape that you're talking about is backwards, and it's on a half-inch tape,
yeah.
That's only got one track going through the middle and mono, etc. These sort of things are a pain in the ass. I mean, every single tape is different. Some of them are quarter-inch, some half-inch, some one-inch. Some of them have got three tracks, some two tracks, some one track, some mono, some backwards, some of them are split, some of them are falling to pieces. And you add this, you multiply this by 100, and you've got 100 different tapes, all different shapes and sizes, and that's why it takes months to do. It's not a matter of just getting a tape, stick it on the machine, bish bosh, there you go. It doesn't work like that. So once you, like I say, once you've got that issue sorted out, then you've also got the acetates, similar sort of problem, because all the acetates are very dirty and noisy, some of them are broken. And then you've got the issue of, is this track the same as that, or is it a slightly different mix, or is it the same mix? I can't quite tell. And then some of the tracks cut off halfway through, and they join onto another tape that you think, is that the same as that? It's a right bloody mess, basically, because none of the tapes had anything written on them either. So it's really hard to piece it all together. But we got there in the end, you know, it wasn't straightforward, but we did get there in it. It's just a lot of work, a lot of time, that's all.
Yeah.
And it's the same for the Malagasy stuff as well.
I was about to ask, that record what you put out is a simple masterpiece. That work.
The five
LP and one 7-inch was...
Yes, Was that the final one? Yeah, we put it all out at once. I mean, the thing is with this type of music is that much as I love it, I know it's not pop music. It's not going to sell millions and millions of copies. This is esoteric, modal, progressive jazz. The market, it's not huge. So if I'm going to make it worthwhile to release it, I've got to do it properly and in the right numbers and make it in such a way that, you know,
How many of it did you do? For the
five discs, the LP, we did 500.
Really?
Yes.
I'm glad to have one of them.
Yeah, and exactly.
I don't know if I could have sold 500 or 5,000, but...
Are you sold out? Oh yeah, it's sold out, yes. Yeah, I got it from Discogs.
Oh right, okay. Well, you probably paid more for it than off us, but anyway. But,
yeah.
I probably paid more.
Anyway, so it's a tricky business because you never know exactly how many press. You never know if you should do 500 or 5,000.
Is it really hard to do a repress and to go back?
Yeah, because the nature of the business, the economy of scale has got to be correct.
Yeah, you gotta decide.
It's the cheaper per unit to make a lot, but it's you still have to have a. I don't like having piles and piles of unsold boxes in my warehouse. I'd rather sell out and move on.
Because
I can't afford to, have shitloads of unsold stuff, and then you have to sell it cheaper, and it makes it cheapens it all a little,
I understand. And what do you know about the relationship? I want to get into Lloyd Neal a little bit because I find somehow I don't know who they are literally. I didn't read so much about them, but their music is so similar. The way I think they approach music is really similar. So what do you know about, because they did a record together, they played together, what do you know about their relationship? And also you did a lifetime in Oriental Jazz.
They were good friends. What happened, Lloyd Miller is absolute one-off, total one of a kind.
Yeah.
A genius, the guy. He can play...
So avant-garde, he's his own man.
He can play any instrument that you put in front of him. The most
and
bizarre,
a television show in Iran.
Convoluted ethnic instrument you can imagine. He'll pick it up and get a tune out of it. I've seen him do this, And not only that, he actually knows what he's talking about, too. He knows, because he studied it all his life. He's in his 70s now, and he's done nothing but for his whole life. His knowledge of ethnomusicology, of where it all came from, and how it's all developed throughout history, he's followed it and lived it. And, he studied it too. Yeah, so, he knows what he's doing, that guy. And he was in Paris. I'm not sure exactly how he met Jeff. I think it was a coincidence. I think it was in
that's
a club.
I read,
or he just heard him somewhere. And they hit it off. Because Jeff is he's another genius type person who has got his own sound, his own ideas, his own talents and abilities, and his own... desire to make his own music, which is what I really respect about him, because a lot of people, they try and make music similar to everyone else, or they just follow whatever the trend is going on, but he just did his own thing. But they hit it off, and you can tell that when you listen to their music, they're having a lot of fun. And music's about fun, really, isn't it? At the end of the day, it's about entertainment and enjoying yourself and making good feelings. And you listen to their music, and you're totally having fun when they're making that music. It fits together, because I found out Lloyd Miller was playing the whistle on the first track on this Spirit of Jazz too.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that at the time when I made the album, but anyway. And Jeff will be playing the piano and doing the arranging, and it all gels together and works perfect as a team. But because Lloyd is the type of person he is, he was a traveller, and he he, you know, eventually left and started traveling around doing his own stuff.
Yeah.
So, but no, neither person had anything bad to say about each other after 30, 40 years, you know. They both have mutual respect and understanding.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, exactly. And the record, I think Lloyd Miller is still alive, and he did that record with the Heliocentrics.
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask, did that record, it, because it came out from Strut Records, and was there sort of a negotiation? Did you try to put it out or what?
I didn't really want to put it out, so and Strut approached me and asked me if they could do it, and I said yes.
Okay.
Reason being, I don't think I could have really done it justice in terms of promotion and publicity that Strut are able to do.
Really?
Yeah, and also because I'm very close to Malcolm and Heliocentrics and Jake.
Yeah, because you put out a 45 early on.
I did, yes. And like I said, because I'm very close to what they're doing as friends, it kind of, you know, it could have got in the way in terms of business as well.
Yeah.
Because friends and business don't always mix.
I understand.
And so it probably, it's good that they, went on to Now Again Records and Strut Records.
And yeah, and how about the Jeff Gilson and Hal Singer? I think it came out on Kindred Spirits, right?
Yeah, that's because that was owned by a different label.
Oh, okay.
That was La Chance du Monde, and that was owned by a record label in the south of France. And yeah, because they've done that, I thought there's no point in doing it as well, because it's already been done, you know, and nothing new here. So, yes. Yeah. That's why that was never put on there.
And so I want to go back again, but since there's so many, you know, of these tapes and stuff, and I want to know essentially if there are so many records that you acquired throughout your life and that you are unable to put out, or you don't want to put out for any...
That's a good, very good point. I'm really glad you mentioned that, because no one really picks up on this. They say, oh, why don't you re-release this? As if, like, I can just click my fingers and, you know, make a phone call and it's done. For every record that I have re-released, I don't know how many, but there's a lot that I haven't, for one reason or another. For every track you see on Spiritual Jazz, there's probably two or three others that I tried to put on there, but I couldn't, because either I couldn't find them or because for one reason or another, they didn't want me to put it on there.
Simply.
Some people, they just don't want you to put their music, they just don't want their music to be heard ever again. It reminds them of a bad time in their life that they want to forget. And much as I try and persuade them and say, look, it's a beautiful piece of music and it's very bad, everyone wants to listen to it, I'll pay you money, etc., they're not interested. And you've got to respect that at the end of the day. It's their music, they can do what they want with it.
Okay.
It's a bloody shame, obviously, but what are you going to do? You know, and that happens a lot.
Yeah.
It's continual frustration. I'm working on the next volume now.
For Spiritual Jazz?
Yes.
What is it called? What's the focus this time?
I'm not sure if I should tell you yet.
Might tell you later. French radio.
But anyway, it's not easy. One reason why not many people do this is because why people make a couple of records and then don't make any more, because they realise what a pain in the arse it is. It's not an easy thing to do.
Yeah.
So, like I say, in theory, it's easy. In theory, just like with the master tapes I was talking earlier, you just ring up the copyright owner, do a deal, bish bosh, done. Ain't easy, but it ain't as simple as that.
Yeah.
Because you're dealing with artists.
Simplified.
And businessmen. Might not be on the same wavelength as you. Tricky business.
I mean, we've been talking about a lot about reissuing, but you also put out a lot of great stuff, including the Great Folk Group.
Yeah.
And who else was? Let me check my notes.
There's Jimmy Margarosi.
Yes, exactly.
Sign of Four, Natural Yogurt Band.
Natural Yogurt Band.
I haven't done much new stuff.
But you almost put out every single record of the Great Folk Group.
Yeah. I think I've put every record out by them.
Yeah.
I don't think I've done anything else with anyone else.
You like doing that also.
What, Greg Foote or in particular? Or,
yeah, meaning not reissuing, releasing bands from
new things.
Contemporary times.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, bottom line is, it doesn't really matter whether it's new or old. If it sounds good,
quality.
It doesn't matter whether it's from 1950 or 2015. If it sounds good, it sounds good. So, you know, but there's two completely different types of business in terms of dealing with a current artist who's performing and gigging and, you know, still around, to something that was done, you know, years and years ago and it's all defunct. And dealing with current art and everything takes a lot more time consuming because they're around all the time. They're ringing you up saying, "Well, I'm on Top of the Pops," etc. You know, and so constantly around, which is fine. You know, they've got a business and a career to continue. With older music, you know, what is being done, that's it, it's done and dusted. There's nothing really much to progress on that. But with new music, I only have so many hours in the day, and I can't really take on, you know, too many bands. I'm happy with Greg because he's a friend of mine. He's doing a great job. He's enthusiastic and he's very capable. Puts out brilliant music, people love what he's doing, and I'm happy with that. But I'm not sure if I could cope with another one or two like him.
Well, was the live recording in the Playboy Club tricky?
No, I just stood there and watched. Let them do all the hard work.
Maybe it was even easier as opposed to some
studio. The guy, engineer from Sweden, he brought all his stuff over.
Sounds really nice.
Yeah, he brought a massive big recording
module
over, and we put them up and got the stuff. So they did all the hard work, you know. Yeah, that's their job. I just pay for it all.
Yeah. And something else you do, you have a show for a long time. I think you've been doing the NTS show with Orsi.
Yeah, it's literally just around the corner here, you know. Just around the next street.
I was going to ask, where is it? Yeah. Where are the studios and how are
literally
they?
Literally on Gillett Square, just around the corner. And yeah.
So very.
And
I'm following Mixcloud, and it's been 4 months you haven't put out a show.
Ask Orsi about that. Okay. She's in charge.
Delegate.
I want to listen.
I don't know why, but it'll be up there sooner or later.
Okay.
Yeah, I think maybe. I'm really not sure why, but yeah.
Do you like the radio?
She'll explain.
The radio format?
You know, I don't. No. I don't.
Really?
I honestly, I don't enjoy it.
We love listening to you, so.
I like playing records, but I'm not.
The talking part.
I'm not a natural broadcaster, not a natural talker.
Yes, but so I think somehow it's a relief to feel that, you know?
Kind of. I mean,
you're very human in your communication to us.
Yeah, maybe so. But
you're very similar to how I'm hearing you now, you know what I mean? It's nice. Nothing. I like that.
Well, thanks for saying so. But, you know, it's not something I have to try really hard to do it.
Okay, so it's not like, you know, not,
yes.
Okay.
I'm not like I said, I'm not a natural show person that can, you know, stand on the stage and start singing a song.
Or even promoting the label, you know, it's kind of Orsi takes
exactly
over.
Orsi
has to
do all
we're
that.
At the alibi, you know?
Yeah.
Oops. It's okay.
It's actually Orsi has to do all that, so my skills lie in different areas.
Yeah, of course. That's amazing. And I'm going to leave you off soon because you probably need to get off.
To
so many stories. But I'm a filmmaker as well, and my brother too, and he's on the producing side more and on the directing side more.
Okay.
And we're really interested in this guy, this pianist from Azerbaijan called Vakif Mustafazadeh. Do you know who he is?
Who's
Vakif Mustafazadeh.
Is he a current musician?
No, he's not. He's from the 70s, pianist,
I might recognize
jazz.
It if I see... Has he made any records?
Yes, he did. It came out mostly from, you know, that famous Russian label, Melodica.
Melodia. Okay.
And...
crikey.
I wanted to see if you know something, and just for... Because we also did a film in New York about this music club called Nublu, which is really small, much smaller than here, which, you know, a lot of... Small artists, you know, jazz to, you know, funk, everything was... And we're really interested in making films about music and about these personalities. And that's why it's amazing for me to hear stories of Jeff Gilson. But hopefully, you know, we'll be in touch in the future. And, you know, just to have more counseling from you and, you know...
Okay. Is that your livelihood? Is that how you make your living? Making films and stuff?
Yes.
Right, okay.
I'm starting out.
Editing.
And...
Right, okay.
Stuff to do with film.
I studied film and...
Right.
Now
right,
we're getting into that. But I hope we can build this relationship where we can have some information exchange.
Okay. I might have something for you coming up, but I'll let you know later. another time.
Exactly.
Don't you hope so?
Of course. No.
Yeah. Okay.
I understand. Well, thank you so much for
thank you so much.
All the conversation.
Not at all. Are we done?
Yes, we are.
Great. Thanks for letting me on the show. It's been fun.
Alors, au lendemain de notre folle nuit chez Alibi, on a une petite gueule de bois quand même, parce que, il faut dire qu'ils savent bien boire, les Anglais, quand même. Et en plus, il fait froid, il y a du vent. Mais bon, on est quand même dans un coin très, très sympa de Londres. C'est à quelques minutes de Shoreditch High Street. C'est un peu l'équivalent des petites rues paisibles du canal Saint-Martin où on se balade le dimanche pour aller bruncher. Et d'ailleurs, en parlant de brunch, on atterrit sur Broadway Market, un marché en plein air qui regorge de millions de petits stands de bouffe. Et ça sent bon et l'ambiance est super. Et on n'a qu'une envie, c'est de manger des œufs. Et donc, et du coup, après un énorme petit déj, on décide d'aller découvrir les magasins de vinyle du coin. Parce que tout le monde nous avait parlé d'un certain magasin qui s'appelle Cosmos Records. Cosmos, je sais pas. Et on a eu de la chance parce que c'était juste à côté de Broadway Market. Et exactement comme on nous avait dit, les vinyles sont super, super rares et super chers. Donc le proprio s'appelle Derek et on a décidé de l'interviewer, même si il est pas anglais, il est canadien.
Right now we're outside the Cosmos Record Store, Cosmos Records London. And my good friend Damla, where is Cosmos? Which neighborhood are we in right now?
Well, right now we're in the borough of Hackney, and this is Hackney Road, actually, a very up-and-coming street. And it's very close to Shoreditch and Hoxton and Dalston, It's in that kind of cool area.
And we have in front of us a Hackney City Farm, and there's a petting zoo.
It's a petting
zoo. Petting zoo, what does that mean?
It means that you can go into the Hackney City Farm and you can pet the sheep and the pigs and all of that who are very cute. And it's, well, for kids mostly, but that doesn't mean that we can go pet them.
And there's construction at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
You know, ugliest commercial ever.
The very ugly commercial
woman
building.
Eating a bagel.
Yeah, it's horrible. And it's called Nettlempoys. Don't move there if you come to London.
But it's a Sunday and Cosmos is still open, so we're going to go in and ask a couple of questions to whoever is inside.
Yeah, let's see what happens.
They have an amazing section of impulse and prestige labels for avant-garde spiritual jazz and a lot of soul funk, new arrivals, jazz in general, disco, and Bollywood India section. A couple of amazing Bollywood tracks. And one section where they have Japanese spiritual jazz. It's really, really interesting. Don't know any of the names here. Elsa, what are you listening to?
Oh my god, this is so funny. It's Russian jazz.
Yeah?
And the guy introduces the song vocally. He says, this is a Russian song inspired by Russian tales.
Really? That's so funny. Do you have anything to suggest from that Japanese spiritual jazz section? Anything you really like? I would love to listen.
Yeah,
something maybe.
This one's amazing. So, you know, a bit of money, but
yeah,
free to listen. And check out this. That's okay. Super cool.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to.
Yeah, I used to buy those. I used to buy their stuff actually.
Yeah.
Jasmine, yeah,
mm-hmm.
Like.
And you don't anymore.
Well, like when I used to DJ and collect records like crazy, I would buy their stuff, you know, to play out and stuff like that.
Yeah, but he's a really cool guy.
Yeah, and they had a shop and everything.
They had a shop?
I think so, yeah.
They did?
Before, I've only been here for like three and a half years.
Oh, okay.
So, Yeah.
So where were, we're rolling just a simple kind of. Where were you living before?
So, excuse me, I'm from Toronto,
okay.
which is where our original shop is located.
And
there's two stores in Toronto. So, so we've been there for 18 years. So we have like kind of a history of doing records and stuff.
So what prompted the move to England, London?
Well, I was here already.
Oh, okay.
So my wife's from from London.
Okay.
So because I was here, I started talking to my colleague, whose name is Aki, in Toronto, about bringing some records over and doing some stuff, because he has a ton of records over there. And it just kind of made the most sense to do an actual shop rather than sort of a market thing or whatever. So
so did you kind of like keep the concept? Like if I were to go to that shop in Toronto, is it kind of the same? Is it?
Yeah. We try to keep it really consistent, actually, with what we're doing over there. So it's always been sort of in-store only, you know, come to the shop. Listen to stuff, check it out. You can listen to whatever you want.
Yeah. You know, I find that really, really important, especially if it's the record that's not, you know, sealed. It's really amazing to be able to listen and...
We want people to, like, discover new music. You know, not just when you're looking it online, you might not find anything new. You might just find what you know already.
And
so
especially now that the internet suggests things for you, you know?
And that's
check out the grooves, you know, or with house or dance. You know, you can find tracks and, samples. You know, you could find a lot of samples and just go through the records and, you know, check it out. So.
And the organization here is really discovery friendly. You know, it's not an organization where it's only, you know, A, B, C
and
or something like that. Because an organization where A, B, C and just artists, you know, just random artists and you just... are looking for something you're already
Sure. Well, because we're a new shop, so we've, we're 6 months old over here. So we kind of get to start fresh, and I was crazy about records for many years, so I've done a lot of buying at shops. So I know what I don't like, and you know, you have piles of stuff and not priced, and you go to the counter, and then they like give you some crazy price for them. So you know, we try to keep it organized, and we do all that. Do all the work, and then you guys
really
have to
helpful.
Like kind of look at them. You know.
Well, it's so. It's my first time. She actually studied here, but and I asked just my the people I collaborated with before. I had guest mix, and you know who were from London, and all of them said go to Cosmos, a new place.
Oh, good.
It's
cool.
Really, really cool. And all of them said one thing. They also said it's really expensive.
Oh yes.
Just I want the rumor to.
Well, I mean, the price, of course, of records is always an issue.
Yeah.
But there's a few factors. The biggest factor here in the UK is the VAT.
What is that?
The sales tax.
Okay. Oh, yes.
So the tax is included in our price, right? So when you see it on Discogs, I don't know if the if there's tax or whatever, but we have to add the 20%.
Yeah.
So that's in the sticker price. So when you see it, that might be a factor. The other thing is we do have sort of rare... Not only, we like all kinds of records, you know, we like regular records.
Yeah.
But we do have some rare records which tend to be expensive, right? So it's not like we're making it up out of the blue. So people could get confused with an expensive record and an expensive price. So our colleague Aki as well has a lot of experience with the market. So we try to keep it a fair market price.
And so who does the digging and where does it happen?
We have guys out in the States looking for records all the time.
Because you have like two amazing label sections for Impulse and Prestige.
We love jazz. We love all kinds of music. So we have people out looking for it all the time.
In the States only? Or
in the States. And then we have some other connections. So we kind of try to bring it in from all directions. As much as we can, you know.
That's really cool. And what do you think about the neighborhood here?
We love it. Yeah, we live in the neighborhood. So
where are we, just so our listeners are?
Sorry?
Where are we, just so our listeners are aware where we
are? Oh, yeah. I guess we're kind of like Hackney, Bethnal Green, Hoxton, Shoreditch in London.
Yeah, exactly. The east.
So the east side.
Yeah.
So we live around here. So when we saw this spot, and you see our nice our nice farm, yes, city farm across the street. Nice. So really, really nice. Some greenery right here in the city.
And
so
a petting zoo, apparently.
A petting zoo. Yeah, and you can get good food in there and stuff.
Yeah.
So we really wanted this location when we discovered it. So that kind of led to like this being an actual shop, you know.
Okay.
Mm. How easy is the kind of bureaucratic setup of things? How easy is it to, you know, rent a place? Landlord relationship. Not easy, actually.
No. So it
compared to Toronto, perhaps.
Yeah. It's a little more difficult over here.
The rent situation, too, maybe.
There were lawyers, and you don't just do the handshake thing
here
in the UK, because you could get kind of, you could get burned. So, a bit of red tape involved, but we're kind of over that now. Yeah. So
I think that's just generally a very European thing.
Yeah.
Tough to get things set up.
Yeah. So, but we got there. So, yeah. So it's all good.
So do you have any employees, or are you alone?
We have one employee, Mafalda.
Okay.
Who is also a DJ.
She's really into this flyer.
Yeah, there's her name on a flyer right there. So she's actually in Paris right now.
Oh, cool.
She played on Friday. So she's really into it. She loves the music.
Is that just her name, her DJ name, Mafalda?
Mafalda, yeah. So, she's cool. Yeah. Very enthusiastic. So,
she's not based in Paris. She's just
Based here.
She's based here.
Mm. Yeah.
It's so easy to go.
Yes. I know.
So it's good to have a good team, So we got us and the Cosmos people in Toronto, call each other all the time.
Yeah.
Guys in Japan, in the States, and sort of a good network of people. Yeah. You know. So yeah.
Really cool.
And you have like clients that come in and say, we went to your shop in Toronto and now it's here and we're so
It's always so good if they've been there, so they know what we're about.
Yeah.
But I also like a bit more of the electronic stuff, newer music.
Okay.
So we'll have a little different vibe over here. But we'll always have a staple of US jazz funk.
And do you ever think of expanding even more? Like
opening
a third one?
No. This is enough.
It's enough for now.
Yeah, for now, yeah.
Come to Paris and it's harder to set things up there. So
yeah, Paris would be cool, but this is good for us over here. And I think I think Aki's all right over in Toronto. Yeah. So yeah.
That's the location?
Toronto's where the two original stores are.
No, you said the neighborhoods.
No, Aki is the man managing.
Aki's our colleague back home.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And just because we play a lot of reissues actually on the show.
Yeah.
And I see that you don't have a lot of reissues, but you have the amazing originals here.
Yeah, we try to have the originals of the reissues.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's our thing, but
we'll get
second pressings in.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get if I see some good reissues, I'll grab them. We're not sort of snobby about it.
Yeah.
But our thing is to get the originals.
Yeah.
So you come in and, I haven't seen that, maybe. Mm. And then just good records in general, even if they're 5-10 pounds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
Cool.
Thank you,
thank you guys.
Thank you.
Wait, we didn't catch your name. We need to see the name on.
I'm Derek.
Derek. Yeah. Perfect.
Thank you very
Lizzie,
much.
Lizzie is my partner.
Okay.
We do the shop.
Yeah.
And Mafalda.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys. Cool. Mm-hmm.
Et oui, on avait tellement envie de visiter d'autres magasins de vinyle chez le quartier Soho et Love Vinyl où une amie travaille. On n'a pas eu le temps comme c'était dimanche. Donc peut-être la prochaine fois, on va visiter les autres magasins de disques. Mais là, il va falloir qu'on vous laisse.
Et oui. Après un week-end génialissime à Londres, un week-end de danse, de musique, de bière, de bouffe, c'est l'heure de revenir dans notre bonne vieille petite ville lumière. Il n'y a plus de tube, maintenant c'est le métro, on quitte le pound, on retrouve l'euro, mais surtout on vous retrouve, vous, nos auditeurs adorés. Et on espère vraiment que les sons de Jazzman Records et le délicieux accent anglais, on espère que tout cela, ça a pu vous sortir de votre quotidien, quel qu'il soit. Donc merci de nous avoir écoutés. Goodbye, thank you so much. Je vais le dire avec un accent britannique.
Merci beaucoup, encore une fois. Vous avez écouté Lion's Milk sur Radio Campus Paris 93.9 FM et à la prochaine mois.
Toodaloo.
Toodaloo. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.